brothers and sisters, Pastor Andrew telling you now, we have a brand new t-shirt to gird your needy torso. This t-shirt honors the only soft drink endorsed by the story. Yeah? I'm talking about Crow-Crowa, a Crow-Crowa shirt. And for a limited time, we have them available as white ringer tees. Look like one of the Strokes. So get them while supplies last. Find the link on Twitter and Instagram at TSMBTPod. Crow-Crowa, plump on it.
Brothers and sisters, I've spent the last week in Story Memorial Hospital recovering from my severe illness last week. Story Memorial Hospital has no licensed doctors. And why, brothers and sisters? Because the story trusts not licensed doctors. Very good. While bedridden, I reflected on last week's story. If you have not heard it yet, you might want to go back in the story and listen to it prior to this. Then, listen to today's story. I reflected on Billy's ability to read thoughts for an oppressive government. I reflected on his co-worker Doug and his nasty perversion, yuck yuck. I reflected on Billy's encounter with Hannah, how he felt for her, and her appreciation of forbidden art. And I reflected on how Special Agent Rogers demanded Billy betray Hannah and the resulting anxiety. Part 2 will be told. The story must be told. I raise my hands to glorify the story. St. Harmy Davidson grew sick of bicycles. He desecrated cars. He grew sick of transportation of all kinds. He attacked buses. He dropped stink shits on the subway. He broke warm wind on planes. On a Tuesday, he fell from the curb and his head did suffer trauma. The paramedics arrived, brothers and sisters. Nope, no ambulance for me, St. Harmy Davidson laughed. He seized out on the curb. There wasn't a funeral. Pastor Andrew approached the pulpit with grace and glorify St. Harmy Davidson with this psalm.
I have a motorcycle, a doo-rah-ree, but no license from the DMV, a doo-rah-rah. I speed in every school zone, a doo-rah-ree. The children jump away from me, a doo-rah-row. One day it was raining, a doo-rah-ree. I went into a skid, a doo-rah-row. I lost control of my bike, a oo-rah-rah, and I struck a kid, a doo-rah-ree. A cop, he pulled me over, a doo-rah-rah, and pulled a gun on me, a doo-rah-ree. But we looked in each other's eyes, a doo-rah-row. He fell in love with me, a doo-rah-ree. He proposed then and there, a doo-rah-row, with a wedding ring, a doo-rah-ree. I couldn't afford the tickets, a doo-rah-rah, so I said yes to him, a doo-rah-rim. The marriage, it was loveless, a doo-rah-row, but he was faithful to me, a doo-rah-ree. I never paid that ticket, a doo-rah-row, for mowing down that poor kid, a doo-rah-rib.
Brothers and sisters, I won't apologize for having a little smirk when I think of that poor kid. I shouldn't laugh, but gosh darn. Skirp! Oh no! Kaplunk, kaplunk! Smoosh! Brothers and sisters, part 2 of last week's story will now be told. Hark!
The Interceptor, Part 2, from the Book of Yearning Tots, by Lee Tommy Jones. The next Monday, I skipped lunch and avoided Hannah at all costs.
On Friday, the assignment would end, she'd walk away safe, and I'd have the reader extracted from my skull forever. My heart hurt at the thought of never seeing her again, but it was for her own good, and for mine. I entered the office through the back stairwell. I kept my head down and I stayed out of the cafeteria. I unplugged my phone at my desk and ignored my email. I mean, I didn't even know what floor she worked on. And if I stayed exactly to this routine, everything would be fine. But as the week went on, I couldn't stay away from her. I dreamt about her. I thought about her all day while staring at a fake spreadsheet and attempting to look busy. I was so grateful there were no other interceptors on assignment here. Not that my thoughts were even in the same universe as Doug's, but I wouldn't want anyone reading some of the private thoughts I was having all the same. On Thursday, I walked into the cafeteria with my heart pounding. My head split with static as soon as I entered the room. She was here. I piled my tray with food I had no intention of eating and followed the static right to her. She bent over her tray with her head down. When she looked up, her lips curved into a gigantic smile. "Billy!" she nearly shouted and quickly covered her mouth and scar with her hand, sheepishly looking around. No one noticed. "Hey, stranger," I said, sitting down with practiced nonchalance. My heart pounded, my hands were shaking. "About last week," she said quietly. The low static that typically whined behind her thoughts was noticeably louder than usual. Her hands shone with invisible acrylic paint, and the smell of turpentine was overwhelming to my chemically enhanced senses. But to me, it smelled like flowers. "Not here," I whispered. I let down my normal calm air. "Got it," she said. "I'll work out the last bug in that formula, and then the quarterly earnings report should be good to go. I'll have plenty of time to respond to 'I think I'm falling in love with this man' email until 7 p.m., and then I want to show him everything, dinner by myself and an early night." "No plans tonight, then?" I asked. My heart immediately sank into my stomach. I gasped. I had broken the cardinal rule. Never respond to a thought. And I scrambled. "I mean, you're not busy tonight. I mean, are you free? Are you free tonight?" Her face went flat and her thoughts went silent. I tried to break through to see if I had blown my cover. She emptied her mind entirely, even closing out the quiet loop of static that had been there the whole time. "Why?" she responded cautiously. "I want to take you to dinner," I said, voice quivering. She didn't react, and it flustered me. "I mean, you know, because we missed lunch so much this week, and I'm sure we have lots to catch up on. Well, you know what? Forget it. That came out weird. Let's pretend I didn't even say anything," I stuttered, humiliated. "No, that's fine," she said emotionlessly. "We can get a drink." She swallowed. "And catch up." Hannah paused. "I'll be at Dempsey's at 7:30. Well, back to work," she said with a forced smile, abruptly getting up. I watched her put her full tray away and rush out of the cafeteria. A quick blast of pent-up static painfully rattled behind my ear and my reader as she opened up the door and left. It made me smile. Hannah's demeanor was completely different that evening. It was the Hannah I knew from the week before. She wore an attractive, unrevealing gray suit with a black scarf around her neck. A warm hum of static underscored all her thoughts. We talked about work and our commutes, this week's weather, and what was expected next week. I was in the middle of a story I made up about fixing my grill over the weekends when the bartender put two more drinks in front of us. Hannah pulled her drink close. She raised the swizzle stick to her mouth and pulled off a maraschino cherry with her white teeth. "I'm on to you, Billy," she said seriously. I paused and went cold. "What do you mean?" I stammered. The static dropped from her thoughts, and her mind went empty, blocking me out entirely. "You have a motive," she responded flatly. "I don't have a motive. No, look, what could I even..." I lowered my voice. "You're the one who tricked me into going," but she cut me off. "I don't think you wanted to make up for lost time from a few missed lunches. I think this is something much, much different," she said, brow furrowed. Forks clinked on plates. The bartender rattled a shaker over his shoulder. "I need to tell you something," I said. I took a breath. I need to tell you that I am, that I have feelings for you," I told her, relieved, but burning with guilt over only telling her half the truth. She stared at me without smiling or frowning. She said nothing, and I looked at the floor silently, embarrassed. A tiny, quick burst of static flashed behind my eyes. I looked up. Hannah looked a little sad, but smiled, and I was confused and ashamed. "Let's have a drink back at my place," she whispered. I sat back, surprised. She continued to gaze at me seriously, saying nothing. I put $50 on the bar. Hannah opened the apartment door and motioned me to enter with her hand. "Gerald, it's Mommy!" she called out in a sing-song. A cat meowed and twisted itself between her legs. She went to pick him up, but he darted away. Static hummed behind my ear. "I think I have wine here somewhere," she said, and started opening cabinets. "Go have a seat." She pointed to the living room without turning around. The room was suspiciously bare and with no flare of personality. The walls weren't even accented with party-approved decorations. There was nothing in the room but two chairs set in front of a small TV. She made no attempt to set up a home office, which was wildly incriminating, and there weren't even file cabinets tucked in the corners. The scent of turpentine hung heavily throughout the apartment, but without a clear source. If any other interceptor came here, she'd be strapped to a gurney deep in the catacombs of the agency building. I sat in one of the uncomfortable chairs and tapped my fingers on my knees as Hannah clambered away in the kitchen. My palms were sweating and my stomach churned with guilt. This was getting out of hand. I'd pushed it too far. If I got involved with Hannah, what then? Wait until she inevitably got caught? Live a secret, devastating life behind her back? Rogers knew her name. Pervert Doug had ratted on her. And what had he said about me? My eyes darted around the room, finally resting on the TV. Something was peculiar about it. I got up from the chair and approached it quietly. I picked it up to inspect it. The TV's weight was distributed oddly, like components were loose inside. And on the back, there was no electric cord. I set it on the ground with the screen facing up at me. And I pulled on its casing, and it very easily popped off, flinging me back just a bit. Inside the fake TV was this stack of rectangles. My reader blurred my vision so I couldn't make them out clearly. I picked one up and it felt like a big manual with soft binding. I flipped through the pages, but the words were blurred. This wasn't like any manual I'd seen before. I set it aside and reached deeper into the television. I pulled out a small square box and opened it. Inside the box was a tiny figure of a woman in pink, tight-fitting coverall underwear with her hands raised gracefully above her head. There was a small crank on the side of the box. I turned it until it was tight. When I let go, it gave me a burst of static, and my reader painfully vibrated behind my ear. Gears churned, plucking in a frequency that shook my teeth. I nearly dropped it, its vibrations burning my hands. I shoved it back into the hollowed-out television along with the manuals. When I set the TV back on the stand, I noticed there was no more noise coming from the kitchen. "Hey, Hannah?" I asked, rising to my feet. "Hannah!" I heard no response. I crept towards the kitchen. The kitchen was empty. I checked her bedroom. It was dark. My ears began to buzz with static, drawing me out of the room and into the hall by the bathroom. The static was coming from the water closet and got louder as I opened the door. In front of me, a water boiler hummed and shook. But the static was growing louder and the smell of turpentine more pronounced. A small beam of light shone through a crack in the wall behind the boiler. I squeezed past it and pushed against the wall. It was a hidden door, and it led me to a medium-sized room. The room was lit warmly. A tarp was spread across the floor, spattered with paint, blurred in different shades of gray by my reader. In the center of the room, a wooden chair sat in front of a large rectangular canvas. My reader blurred out the image. There were squeezed tubes of paint on the floor. "I wanted you to see this." Hannah's voice startled me from the corner of the room. Pushed against the wall was a wooden box with a spinning black disc inside. An arm hung over the disc, plunging a sharp needle that emitted noise through a large brass funnel, blocked out by my reader's static drone. "Hannah," I whispered. She approached me slowly. "What do you think of my painting?" she asked. I turned and beheld the blurred out square, then looked back at her. "Hannah, I can't see it," I murmured. She put her arms around my shoulders and kissed me, loud static popping in my ears. She pulled away and looked me in the eye. "I know you can't." She kissed me again. "You're an interceptor," she whispered sexily behind my ear. I wanted to tell you, Do you wish you could see my painting? She asked huskily. I took a breath. Yes, I responded. Do you wish you could hear the music? She motioned to the disc player. I do, I replied. I moved in for another kiss, but she pulled away. She took my hands in hers and stared deeply into my eyes, holding me by the wrists. She smiled. I guess you were going to make it to thought extraction one way or another, weren't you? Hannah! I gasped, eyes wide. She grabbed onto my forearm and reached for my watch. She pushed the silent alarm to send an alert to the apprehension team. I fell to the ground and bear crawled away from her on all fours. Hannah, oh my God, what have you done? I panted as I scurried against the wall, desperately trying to rip my watch off as if that would change anything. Plaster fell from the ceiling as a buzzsaw cut out a perfect circle from the floor above, and five men in black suits and sunglasses rappelled down on ropes. They fixed their heads on me and extended their batons in unison. The shortest of the five swung at me. I raised my hands to protect myself, and he connected with my wrist, shattering it. A small piece of bone poked out from my hand. He swung once more and caught me on the side of my skull. My ears rang and my vision blurred. I felt the violent stab of a reader extractor go into the side of my neck as a bag went over my head. I woke up with a jerk, but my arms and legs were tied to a chair. My face and head throbbed with explosive pain, and my testicles were burning. As my vision returned, I looked down. My undershirt was soaked in deep, dark red blood. I hadn't seen color in years, not since my reader had been implanted. There's a quantum computer battery wired to my balls. You're so judgmental, Billy. You're such a prude, mocked a familiar voice. I looked up. Doug took a drag from a cigarette. His sleeves rolled up, hair disheveled, and dress shirt spattered with blood. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Interceptor First Class Daniel Schultz, he grinned. Well, Sergeant Interceptor Daniel Schultz now. I spat on the ground. Teeth were missing. Molars were broken. What did they teach us at the Academy, Billy? He approached me. I breathed heavily. I'd like to hear you say it. Never trust a rat fuck, I wheezed. He smiled and violently punched me in the side. A rib broke. I coughed blood. He laughed. Close, Billy, but I'll remind you. He cleared his throat and put his face an inch away from mine. A thought is never safe. He swung and connected hard against my cheekbone. My ears rang. Some pals in thought revision cleared out the past few days from your head. Brother. He laughed. You had an impeccable record until a few weeks ago. You came so close! I spat in his face. He punched me in the nose. It shattered. He started to speak, but stopped himself, turned around, and walked to the big steel door at the front of the empty brick room, wiping saliva and blood from his face. He pounded on the door, and it swung open. Two gigantic men in leather coats and matching hats entered the room. Take him to thought extraction! Daniel barked at them, rubbing his face in disgust. He turned to me. You're not going to remember this, pal, but I want to say it. You can go fuck yourself. He left the room as the massive men approached me. They untied the ropes from my limbs without speaking and gruffly pulled me to my feet, twisting my arm behind my back. My broken wrist screamed in pain as they dragged me into the hallway. Their boots clicked on the linoleum floor in unison as my socks left streaks of blood from where Doug had apparently beaten beneath my feet. I was happy I didn't remember. Piercing screams and whirring drills echoed off the walls. They pushed me through swinging doors into the same room Fred had showed me before. It was pristine, antiseptic. Six surgeons in blue scrubs stood around a gurney with their gloved hands in the air to keep away germs. Hello, I groaned to them. I wasn't sure why I said it. The men abruptly lifted me. My broken ribs poked into my lungs, and I bit down on my lip with my broken teeth to suppress a yelp. I decided I wouldn't scream. I was gonna face this like a man. Behind me, a machine clicked on, and a sucking noise like a bellows began to pump. An orderly flipped on a boombox, and calming music began to play. I could hear it. I laughed. Hey, that music isn't approved by the state, I joked. More machines whirred to life as a stinging smell of ozone took over the room. They scurried around me silently, getting into place. I raved, laughing at myself. This was all so stupid. Music is forbidden under Section 8, Article 4, Paragraph 20 of the Approved Thoughts Act of 1996. I rambled on. You are hereby... The ear-splitting whine of a drill roared next to my ear as the shadow of a surgeon leaned over me. In the corner of my eye, I caught the swinging doors opening. Hannah entered, wearing a black suit, black shirt, and a black tie. Hannah, I'm glad you can make it, I moaned. The drill went into my forehead. It didn't hurt. Who is the man in the video? Dr. Parker asked in his warm voice. The man on the screen looked like me, but I had no memory of this incident. Where is he? Dr. Parker continued. The man on the screen was stretched out on a gurney in the middle of an operating room. A surgeon plunged an instrument into his forehead, extracting a gray goo. A woman in a suit approached the patient and sat down on a stool next to him. She began to ask questions. The patient on the table looked so much like me, it was uncanny. He'd struggle here and there, but he was mostly docile. The man looks like me, I told Dr. Parker. He frowned. I had a headache. A sore behind my ear hurt when I moved my jaw to speak. But I know that... that is not me, I continued. He smiled. And you're positive that isn't you? Dr. Parker asked. No, that's not me. I would remember if something like that happened, I told him. He smiled. Billy, you've made terrific progress, Dr. Parker grinned. We'll conclude our session early today. I'll give you some free time before lunch. I nodded and excused myself and walked down the hallway towards my room. I had 14 minutes before lunch. That would give me plenty of time to review my recovery documents and take notes. Then I could prepare for a job interview Dr. Parker had arranged for me. It was for a business analyst position opening up at a finance firm called Sturgeon Associates. Tomorrow is slated to rain.
Excuse me, a woman said gently as she approached me, breaking my train of thought. She looked kind of familiar, like the woman in the video, but I couldn't be sure.
I stopped and lowered my head at the stranger as Dr. Parker had instructed.
Relax, you can look at me, she said. I raised my head to see her.
She had normal features, except for a scar running from the corner of her mouth to her jawline. Otherwise, she was unremarkable. Can I help you? I asked.
I'm losing time to study and we'll have to rush through lunch, then it will be right back to my recovery work until my final session of the day with Dr. Parker.
No, everything's fine, she replied.
Do you remember me? She asked, smiling in an odd way.
I don't, I replied honestly, a little uncomfortable.
9 p.m. is a reasonable enough amount of time to go to sleep if I want to get back at it at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning.
I don't remember you either, she replied.
She winked and walked down the hallway. I went to the cafeteria for lunch. The story must be told.
The end of that story really struck me in the story plexus. That's the bone in the middle of your chest where the story does wriggle in. The fact that Billy had that little piece of his brain cut off, or maybe a big chunk, made me so jealous. Oh, I would love just a little chunk of my brain, perhaps the part that knows my mom's phone number, could get cut out, tossed down the shitter, and flushed away to Bye Bye Town. See you later. Ugh, the space I would have to store my commemorative coins, to store my favorite rolled up scripture pieces from the book of story proper, the space I would have to stick my finger ever further inside and tempt my brain prostate. Everyone's got one. Girls, too. Huh. What we would do with less space in our brain for brain and more space for story. Reflect upon this and drill yon brains a hollow.
Thank you for listening to The Story Must Be Told, and I've been wandering the desert for 4 months. We're proud to be hosted on the Last Podcast Network, and I don't remember what being hydrated feels like. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TSMBTPod. And, oh, hey, Pastor Andrew Brother Reed and Sister Callista are now on Twitter at PSTRAndrew, at Our Brother Reed, at Sister Callista. Make sure there are two L's in there. And I just pray each day something will take me and take me quick, because this thirst is unmanageable. Buy one of our shirts. We've got a new Crow Crowa shirt plump on it for you. Find the link in our Twitter, Instagram, and SoundCloud. And oh hey there, little snake boy. There's a little snakey coming my way. Oh yes, he is. Rate and review us. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. Spread the story. And this little snakey has such pretty shiny little teeth. Don't you, little snake? Oh, you little snakey. This was a Post Everything production. Learn more at posteverythingproductions.com. We have short films and all sorts of free extra content. And oh, you want to snip my little leg? And oh God, his face. Oh, his face. Oh, they've hurt my ankle. Oh, God. We'll be back next week. And oh, the venom. Oh, sweet release. But oh, it is torture.
A fat fucking tongue. I've said it before.
I hate it when I feel your tongue.
This story must be told.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.